Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Rodrigo at Hair House de Campos. Rodrigo, great having you on.
Hello, Robert.
So, Rodrigo, you're in Brazil, and you had this petition for right of return for South African whites, and this petition got a lot of major mainstream news coverage in both newspaper. Well, there was a South African newspaper that covered it, and some major newspapers in the West. First of all, tell us about yourself and what originally got you interested in the situation in South Africa.
Okay. Well, this is something that came very early in my life. I was raised. Since I was really, really young, my parents told me that I came from European ancestry, so I always identified myself as a European, ethnic European.
What country specifically?
Well, actually, I come from a Portuguese and German ancestry. 50% German, 50% Portuguese. So, but yeah. So I knew from where I came from. I understood that I was part of this group because my family told me so. And so okay, but I actually this kind of feeling, this kind of conscience were sleeping in my head for many years. I just came back to think about it and to understand that the whole white race were disappearing. Like I know that in the 60s we were like 33%, and now we are only 8%. And I realized that we have to do something if you want to survive as a group. And I thought that trying to help the cause of white South Africans could be a way to help preservation for the white race. So yeah, that's the my main motivation. I think that's it. I'm not sure if you have further questions.
How much do you know about the situation in South Africa? Would you use the term genocide to describe the current situation? I mean, I know that the United Nations, or maybe it was like a Human Rights Watch. They're actually an organization that has a reputation for being very liberal, but they had a report that put this position of whites in South Africa at a stage in, they didn't say it was genocide, but they said it showed signs of like early stages of genocide.
I think, in my opinion, it is a genocide because it was forcibly implemented as a political system. Of course, there are not the government is not directly enforcing the genocide. I mean, in a directly manner, they're not doing this. But indirectly, they are doing this because they are promoting hate. The government promotes the idea that the whites are the enemies. The whites are promoting the whole impoverishment of South Africa when in fact it's not happening. Yes, it's happening. South Africa is becoming more poorer, but it's because of the socialist policies that the government is implementing. So, but the government of course is trying to put the guilty in somewhere else. So they put it on the whites, and then okay, so the government promotes this conflict. So it is a genocide because it's forcibly implemented. But even if it's in the indirect manner, but it is being forcibly implemented to to the genocide.
And basically, what's going on is there's a lot of black and white crime there, and it's not the government promotes. They promote it indirectly because a lot of their propaganda incites it.
Yes.
The other thing is that the police, they don't really do anything about it. They allow it to happen, but if whites try to act, they're not. First of all, they're not allowed to own guns, so they're not allowed to defend themselves. But if they do defend themselves, then they're often thrown in prison.
Yes, and I know that, for example, in South Africa, there are different laws. I mean, if you commit the same crime and you're white, you pay for many more years of prison. And if you're black, you can stay there for a few days or something like that. I know they have different laws according to your race, so it's completely racist. And the mainstream media loves to talk about the apartheid being racist and everything, but they completely ignore what is happening today and the actual police of South Africa. And nowadays, they completely ignore that, which is much worse than what happened during the apartheid.
Yeah, because there were not, under apartheid, there was not really mass murder. It was just forced separation, but they weren't going around killing people.
Yes.
What's going on now is a lot worse.
Exactly.
Have you communicated a lot with people in South Africa about this issue before you came up with your petition?
Yes. There's a guy from the Front National Party. I'm not really sure. It's Front National, but yeah, because it's their all language, so it's a little bit in Afrikaans. Yes. So yeah, you write that a little bit different way. I was in contact with this guy before, but not much frequent. That's it. And then after that, a lot of South Africans came to add me in Facebook, and then I had a more intense contact. But nowadays, I don't have much contact with them anymore. And that's it. Mm-hmm.
When you talk to them, do most of them want to leave, or do most of them want to stay and fight and have a strong connection, or do they have kind of mixed feelings about it?
I would say that most of them told me they want to leave. Perhaps 10% or something think about fighting. I understand that feeling. I hold dual citizenship. I have Brazilian passport and a German passport. I love Europe. I spend 1 year and a half living there, but I don't feel completely. I mean, here's my land. You know, here's where I feel completely comfortable. I mean, not completely comfortable. There are a lot of problems here, of course, but I only feel really at home when I'm here, so I understand that you're feeling. I know South Africa has all these problems, but I understand when some of them want decide to stay there and fight.
I would say the same about where I live in California. Mm-hmm. California has a lot of problems, but at the same time, I still have a connection to the area. I don't know if I necessarily want to leave, so I can kind of sympathize with that. I mean.
Yeah, but one point it seems that these people, I mean, this 10% of South Africans that I'm talking about, it seems that some of them didn't understand that the petition is not like to force them to move. It's just to give them an alternative. They don't have to move. If the European Union decided, okay, you can come here as refugees, they are not forced to do that. They can stay there and resist until they think it's possible to resist, and then when they decide that okay, we can't stand it anymore, we have the option to move. So it seems that some of them think that this petition would be like something that would force them to move, but of course it's not. It's just to give them an alternative. Like I have dual citizenship, I have the open borders of Europe, for Europe, I mean. But I don't have to move there. I can stay here. And when I decide to move there again, I do. This is the kind of thing that me and the other guy from Canada, yeah, we Canada, this petition was written by two people. Me and another guy. I'm not really sure if he wants to wants me to mention his name, but we wrote that together. I came with the idea, and then he thought, okay, that's interesting. And then we had a brief debate, and then we wrote, and then we review everything, and then we post with my name, win it.
And the thing is, right now they're not. It's very difficult for them to leave, and they're having cases of some of them actually coming to the United. I think there was a case where some South Africans went to Canada and they were deported.
Yes, I heard about that.
And the other, I know, for there's very few Afrikaners have immigrated to Europe, but I do know a lot of Anglo South Africans have immigrated to England and Australia. But the thing is, they have that connection to England. The Afrikaners are originally a Dutch, mm-hmm. but their connection to like the Netherlands so distant, they don't really have the same connection that the English do.
Yeah, I spent a year working in the UK, and only in my area of work, I mean, in the company I was working within my sector, yes, in my sector of work within the company I was working for, there were two South Africans. But at that time I wasn't really aware. Yes, I was aware of what is happening there, but not that much. The point is, I just want to mention that there are a lot of Afrikaans living in the UK. I had the chance to meet only two, but I heard that there are a lot of them in there.
So when you created the petition, at what point did it really start to become, really go viral, and you start to get a lot of attention?
Okay, that was really quick, but the reason, the secret behind this, I think this is the first time I'm publicly saying this. I mean, this is not something that I had to write. I mean, other people could do the same. But okay, the whole thing started becoming viral because we had a lot of contacts from different pages in Facebook. The most important page is the This is Europa. I'm not really sure if it's This is Europe or This is Europa. Yeah, they have a lot of followers, thousands of followers, and they put it. They included the petition link for the as a pin link. I think this is how you call it, a pin link. You know, when it's in the top. So no matter what you post next, it always keeps in the top. So they did this, and a couple of other pages did the same, and the whole thing just got really fast after that. That was the starting point where it got really strong. But I was really not expecting that it would went to the mainstream media. They even had a debate. I'm not really sure if you watched this, but they had a debate in one of the biggest South African TV channels. I think it's SATV or something like that. The whole thing got really big. But yeah, the whole thing got big from this point, because it was a coordinated action. We had a lot of support. That's it.
What was the first major news outlet to cover it?
Precisely the express.co.uk. That was the first major mainstream media that covered it. Yes.
What was their coverage like? Was it negative or neutral?
That was really funny, because first they were kind of negative. They made like how do you call this? And they wrote something like that. flood of white South Africans would invade Europe or something like that, very sensationalist and trying to make it very negative, like that, like they would come all together immediately and they would cause economic problems. You know, this is the kind of the way they wrote that's how they made it sound. Which is really funny because they wrote something like that, but now they don't write the same thing about the Syrian refugees. Syria.
No, of course not.
But because South Africans, the white South Africans, because they are white, so they say they would flood Europe. Oh, Europe would be flooded by white people. Oh, that sounds like a big problem. But the funny thing is, they wrote that, and then when they realized that the petition was getting really much bigger, because like I told you, they were the first mainstream media to publish this. And then when they realized that this were getting really much bigger, they changed it. They changed it in their publication, their website, for something more. They wrote they wrote that white South Africans are afraid of having their lives at risk or something like that, and they want to have the right to migrate to Europe. They completely changed the way they speak.
So that showed that you had some success at what you set out to do.
Yes, of course, some of these South Africans, they came to contact me directly, and they were like asking me, "Oh, okay, what should we do next? When will Europe open the borders to us?" But I understand that they are really afraid and they need an immediate solution, but unfortunately, I don't have the power to do much more than I did. This is something that may take years, to be honest. But that,
these petitions are basically they're purely symbolic. They don't really affect the law, but they're very important because if they get enough signatures, they get the message out there, and that's the
purpose. Exactly. At least we raise the debate for the ethnic nationalism, so people start to understand that the white people they are much more than Europe.
One thing, let's say hypothetically, they were to allow right of return and let in white South Africans as refugees, it would make a strong statement that the government under the ANC in South Africa is an anti-white government, and that would totally go against the whole agenda of the establishment that they've been pushing. So politically, it would make a strong political statement, and that's why obviously the establishment would be against it, because it would prove their ideas were false.
Yes.
What are some parallels you see with the refugee situation with the whole Syrian refugee situation in the United States? There have been people, a lot of politicians are saying the United States should bring in more Syrian refugees. And then right now, like, Donald Trump came out and he said we should just ban all Muslim immigration. And in Europe, they have this, it's not just, I think the media is saying it's just a Syrian refugee crisis, but what's basically happening in Europe, it's basically the whole world, all of that, it's like all of Africa, the Middle East, and South Asia, it's not just Syria, is invading into Europe.
Yes, it's ridiculous because, I mean, I agree with you, and it's, what is happening in Europe is completely insane. The governments, they are turning blind eyes to what is happening. I mean, because obviously, most of these people, they are not even Syrians. They don't look Syrians. You can see, they can clearly see they are not Syrians, and I know there are a lot of lost passports on the seaside from Pakistani and other nationalities which are not Syrian, and it seems like the governments in there, they are just letting everybody come in. At this point in time, I'm not really sure how things are in there, but until a month ago, things were completely out of control.
I also read somewhere that Brazil has taken in some Syrian refugees, but they were unhappy in Brazil because there weren't enough benefits. Yeah. And also, there's not a significant Muslim population in Brazil. I know Brazil traditionally has had a significant Syrian community, but most of them have been Christian.
Yeah, I'm not pretty sure. But I don't know for sure that there are not many Muslims here. That's true. That's a really interesting point, because when you are a war zone area, all you want is to... You have two options. You can fight, or you can leave. If you want to leave, you are leaving because you want to preserve your life, right? So why these people are complaining about not having benefits? I mean, the biggest benefit they can get is to have their whole life preserved. Yeah. So they can, if they have their lives preserved, they can work. They can have their stuff from their all labor. So I find it really funny. I know that in Uruguay, which is a neighbor country here, there are a lot of Syrian refugees complaining about not having enough benefits in Uruguay. The same thing. I'm not saying that the whole Syrian people are like that, because I don't know of them. But it seems like these people that are coming to these areas, to Brazil or to Uruguay, they are very ungrateful people. They should be grateful that these countries are receiving them and having and giving them the chance to preserve their lives. And that's my opinion.
Can you talk about the situation in Brazil? First of all, the place where you are is in the, you're from the south of Brazil, but I'm not sure how significant this movement is, but I know there was a secessionist movement in the south of Brazil.
Okay, would you like me to talk about the whole Brazil thing, or should we start immediately?
I guess we can start off about that secessionist movement in the south of Brazil. Is there a specific, does it have a specific name, like of the country?
This is not something that we had a debate yet about the names. The movement tries to avoid this kind of debate, because we understand that this is something for the future, and we would be like wasting your time and having a lot of flame war. Do you understand? Like, I know,
yeah.
we should have this name and the other. So we say, no, the name should be one. Do you understand? You understand that this is wasting time. You know? We have other priorities, so we just try to avoid this kind of debate. The whole thing, the movement has the idea of have a secession for the three southern states. There is Paraná. Then there's Santa Catarina, which is where I live, and then there's Rio Grande do Sul. These are multicultural states, just like the rest of Brazil, but not that multicultural. We are a little bit more homogeneous, but the whole point is. Actually, there's a lot of reasons, but the main reason is an economic reason. We have in Brazil a federation like the United States, but it's a pseudo federation. We don't have like the autonomy that you guys have in there. For example, I know that in the United States, certain states, they have different laws for gun ownership or You have like, isn't it like that? You have different laws, and then you also have your own economy. You pay
to a degree, because originally in the Constitution, the 10th Amendment granted rights to the states, but there's still a lot of the federal government certainly violates states' rights, but there's maybe some degree of autonomy. But you're saying in Brazil, basically the federal government controls everything?
Exactly. That's the whole point. If you, I know that in the United States you still have some kind of centralization of power. That's why there are, I don't know how strong they are, but I know there are secession movements in there, like Texas, and I don't remember the other ones. But so that's, if they exist, that's because they want more autonomy. But in Brazil, things are a little bit more extreme, because like the central government, they control, well, they control almost everything, and they centralize all of our economy. I'll try to explain you how insane things they are here. Okay, for example, everything that our states produce, 5% goes to Brasilia, which is like Washington DC, and then we get back 15%, or sometimes less. And other states that they may produce less, they pay less to Brasilia. So it's very socialist in its essence. The constitution is, the Brazilian constitution is very, very socialist. So it's very hard to change this. And that's why we have this, this is not the only reason, but this is the main reason we have, this, movement. We want to have economic independence, politically and economic, but especially economic independence.
Yeah, because a lot of, I think that is a motivator behind secessionist movements. You have, wealthier regions want to succeed. And, with leftists who tend to be radical egalitarians, they tend to oppose secessionist movements based on those grounds. But I think there is a fundamental difference between productive wealth and, parasitic wealth. A productive wealth is a region that's able to become successful on its own. Parasitic wealth is a city that's wealth is based on taking in wealth from other regions. I think leftists tend to they tend not to make that distinction because they believe in they just are opposed to any form of inequality, but they don't make the distinction between the two.
Yes, like for example, here we have like this. The same in Santa Catarina specifically. I know about Santa Catarina because this is my state. We have this same tradition that started in the United States from small agricultural properties. So we have families that they own small properties. We also have a port. We also have the metal industry that the Germans brought in the past. So we have a pretty heterogeneous economic system. So yeah, we have a lot of reasons to believe that we could be a successful country, and a successful independent country. Yeah.
Do you have an issue with are a lot of non-whites from northern and central Brazil moving to the south of Brazil?
Well, I'm that's a tough question. I think we should have some kind of control, some kind of immigration control, because for example, São Paulo was a city. They had a certain identity. They had like They had different groups of people living there, but they kind of had some kind of identity. But now the whole thing got completely lost, and they, in a certain point, it seems like they lost their sense of identity as a group. So it's really funny because there's a separatist movement in there. And it doesn't get much strong attention from the people in there. I believe that's because they are so like individualist, because they don't feel like a group. So they don't, this is the kind of thing that I'm afraid of here, right? I'm afraid that we would get so many immigrants, so thousands of millions of immigrants, and then we would lose the sense of identity.
That's what happened where I live in California. Secessionist movements and a strong sense of regionalism happen in places where people have a strong connection to the area where their family has been there a long time. Mm-hmm. In California, like, most people are either they're either immigrants or they're transplants from other parts of the country, so they don't really have a strong sense of a regional identity. People are just purely individualistic, or they're part of their immigrant community, but there's no, like, regional identity that you see in secessionist movements.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not completely against immigration. That's insane. I mean, the immigration happens everywhere. I am somehow, I used to be an immigrant as well, but I mean, I don't believe in mass immigration. I think this kind of thing will destroy the sense of identity.
Well, the key issue is the numbers.
Yes, the numbers. Exactly. Because there's no time for this. If you bring hundreds of people to your country, these people will have the time to adapt themselves and to integrate themselves. But if you bring millions of people, how can you integrate them? You will not integrate them. They will create like a parallel society, and this is not healthy.
Yeah, I mean that is what happened in California, and United States as a whole. I mean, legally, there's illegal immigration and legal immigration, but combined, I think the United States probably takes in about 2.5 million people a year, which is just insane.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on the whole situation in the United States with American politics, and I know with Donald Trump?
I think, I don't know that much about the United States nowadays, but from where I could see, it's a long time that the United States is losing the whole essence. They used to be an actual free country. I know that, I'm not pretty sure the year, perhaps you can tell me, but I know, for example, there was a time in the United States you didn't have to pay income tax. There was no income tax.
Well, we've had the income tax since 1913. It's been a century.
So, I mean, I really like the idea of United country from the beginning, but it seems like you guys are getting more and more socialist, more and more liberal, and I'm really afraid about the future. I mean, things perhaps are not that bad now, but I'm not pretty sure until how long.
Does Brazil have a lot of problems, like, with a lot of... I've heard it has, like, one of the highest crime rates and murder rates in the world.
Yes, that's true. And actually, it depends on the region. Of course, the violence happens everywhere in Brazil, but fortunately, in the south of Brazil, you still have a little bit more... a little bit more peaceful society. I think because it's a little bit more homogeneous, so... there's another reason for that. Santa Catarina, for example, has the highest gun ownership. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. In Brazil. Also, at the same time, we have the lowest deaths by murder. So I strongly believe that the gun control, the strict gun control, which is, I know that in the United States is a very strong agenda, that may not necessarily, but most probably may increase the death rate.
what parts of Brazil are the have like the worst problems in regards to crime and poverty?
The north and northeast of Brazil has the highest crime rate and the highest. They are the like the poorest and they that's it. And then you have in the south you have the lowest, and then in the middle is the middle.
What about the major cities like Rio de Janeiro and Sao Paulo?
Rio de Janeiro has this favelas, so you have a lot of you literally have like a parallel society in there. They have their own laws, like drug dealers. So there's a lot of deaths, but most of these deaths they happen between the conflicts between the police and the drug dealers. And other people that may be involved in the middle. That's it. But of course there are sometimes some people they are literally not involved, they don't consume drugs, they don't sell drugs and nothing like that, but they still get robbed and killed. And yeah, that happens too. But most of the time it's a conflict between the police and the drug dealers. It's very intense. In the Rio de Janeiro, it's very intense.
How strong is a political correctness in Brazil? Is it as bad as it is in the United States and Europe?
Nope. Brazil has a lot of problems, but politically correctness here, this is something very interesting, because at least this is something that I can't complain that much. This concept of political correctness is very strong in the establishment, in the universities. The mainstream media is extremely politically correct. But the people, the general population, they don't like these ideas. They refuse to follow these ideas. But of course, the government keeps pushing, and the universities they keep pushing, the mainstream media keep pushing. But it's really funny that even when they try to push these ideas, the people they still refuse to follow. For example, in 2005, I may be wrong, but that doesn't matter. But 2005, let's say there were public how do you call that? I forgot that. When you want to ask the people something, then you bring a question, and then you can vote.
I know what you're talking about.
So
voter initiative.
Yeah. So they had. The government was asking the people if they were in favor or against the control of guns. The strict control of guns that only few people could have this. So that was the question. Then the mainstream media they made a huge lobby, a huge propaganda to support the ideas of government. The universities and the whole all the leftists they made a huge campaign. They had a lot of external financial and everything to convince the people to vote for a more strict control of guns. Yeah, but even so, even with the whole establishment trying to convince the people to vote for a more strict gun control, they lost it. They lost it. And yeah, so I have been in Europe. I lived in there, and I also have very constant contact with Canadians. And well, it seems horrible. I mean, over there they have a better economy and everything. They have a safer society and everything. But the political correctness is quite insane over there. I heard really weird stories of all these places.
What are the different sort of can you talk about the different political and economic factions? Obviously, you have you have the underclass. Is there, among the white population in Brazil, is there a division between liberals and conservatives the way there is in the United States? Like, we have the, there are political divides. You have the elite in New York and California, and then you have people in the Midwest and the South who are more conservative. Do you see those same divides in Brazil?
Yeah, I do, definitely. Well, actually, the thing is, in the past, but not that past, like perhaps 10 years ago or something, we had this a more clear division. We had, like, in the Northeast, people were more leftists, but there was a reason for that. I mean, because that could be very convenient, because they got a lot of government benefits, because they don't produce that much, so they like I told you a couple of minutes ago, they didn't produce that much, but they get a lot of money from government.
You have two types of leftists. You have lower income people who are leftists for economic reasons, and then you have rich people who are culturally leftists.
Yeah, we don't have many cultural leftists over here. Most of them are economic, because they're in Brazil. If you see someone that is really he seems to have conviction about the left side, you can probably suspect that he's getting some money from some illicit money. That is what is happening most of the time. So we had this more strict division, that in the Northeast the left parties would get a lot of votes. In the South, especially in Santa Catarina, the Labour's Party, for example, which is the PT, the Partido dos Trabalhadores, which translated is Labour's Party, they always get few votes over here. But now, what is happening is, because Brazil is in a deep economic crisis, even in the Northeast is losing their benefits. The central government is cutting the benefits that they used to give them. And now, as a result, we are getting like 90% of the people against the leftist government, and then you have strong. It seems like people are strongly opposing these communist ideas, but I'm not really sure if all of them are doing this from a very honest way. So some people are just mad because they are not getting money anymore. But yes, okay. Being straightforward. To answer you, you get more right wings and conservatives in the South, but more in Santa Catarina. In the Rio Grande do Sul, which is the south, which is the most southern state in Brazil, you have a lot of this cultural leftists, because Rio Grande do Sul is not a poor state; it's a relatively well developed state, but you still get all of this cultural leftists. And then Santa Catarina, you have it's a very conservative state and right wing. And then Paraná is I don't know, it's something in the middle. And then if you go north, and then it's very left wing. But the left is losing its force here, but probably because of the economy. That's it.
Well, there's a perception that white people in South America are mostly rich. Would you say, is that stereotype true, or do you say there's a lot of poor whites as well?
Most of the white people here are middle class. I would not say rich, but yeah, they are middle class. Because I believe that happens from historic reason. Yeah. Because the first immigrants that came here, Italians, Germans, Spanish, Portuguese, etc., they came here, they had a profession that could be either agriculture or other things, and then they usually would teach their kids to follow that profession, and then And then their kids would teach their kids to follow the profession and etc. And then you have this flux of wealthiness, a flux of productivity, and then as a result, you don't see many white people here being too poor. You know? But yeah, there are poor white people, of course, but most white people they because they carry this tradition of productivity, and so they tend not to be that poor.
What are race relationships like in Brazil? Is there a lot of racial tension, or is most of the tension economic based?
Mostly economic based. I don't see much of racial tension here. Of course, you don't see many. They happen, but most of the time you don't see many of this interracial relationships. But honestly, I believe that you don't see interracial relationships here because of, not because of race, but because of the economic prospect, you know. Because as I told you, the middle class is mostly white, so you tend to establish a relationship with people from your own economic level, yeah. So that, as a result, that you tend to establish a relationship within the same race, but not because of race, because you are under the same economic level. I'm not pretty sure about that, but I suspect that if things were more equal, I don't support this forced equality, don't get me wrong, but I'm just telling you that if there were a more equal society, I believe we would, as a result, get more interracial relationships. Yeah, that's it.
But you don't have the same level of tension. I know in America has a long history of ethnic tension between blacks and whites. I know I was reading a blogger he's a blogger in America who writes a lot of negative things about blacks, but actually, he visited Brazil, and his impression was that Brazilian blacks were a lot friendlier than American blacks.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Here, the black people here, they don't have this kind of feeling. It seems, I'm not really sure. I have never been living in the United States, but I heard these stories before. It seems like people there, honestly, it seems like it's more on the black side. They feel kind of it seems like they put the guilty for their unsuccessful lives in on the whites, so they kind of hate them. But this kind of feeling doesn't happen here. I don't personally see this. Black people guilting white people for something. I honestly don't see it. Usually, if you have the same mentality and economic level, and you are black and you are white, you tend to hang out together. There's no problems here. That's it.
Before I wrap up the show, is there anything else about either Brazil or about the petition with South Africa that you'd like to add that I didn't touch upon?
No. Well, yeah. There's one thing about Brazil. Things because we had this socialist formula that started in the 60s and actually got strong in 2000. But now, fortunately, it seems like people are changing their mentality, stopping supporting socialists, because we got to a level that always economy. Yeah, unfortunately people need to feel poorer to start doing something. So now the Argentina, for example, have a new president which is much less socialist. And Venezuela is also got a major parliament members for the opposition, which should make this Bolivarianist state weaker. And now in Brazil we also have this 91% of the population is against the government. They are understanding I don't believe that economic liberalism may solve all the problems, but from what we have now, it's much better. It's a much better solution because at least we can have the chance to get a more stable economy. So I believe for the next 10 years things could be a little bit better here. We reached a point that we can't go much deeper any longer. So things from now on should get a little bit better. I'm kind of optimistic, at least in terms of economy, for the Latin America, especially Argentina. For sure, Venezuela will get better, and Brazil, at least when this government gets out, things should get a little bit better.
What do you see as the future of South Africa? Do you see things getting dramatically worse, or you just see things kind of stagnating as they are now? Or do you see a dramatic change to the worst?
Honestly, I believe I don't believe it can get any worse. But if it gets, I mean, if things get much worse than what it is now, perhaps some kind of radical may happen. I believe the secessionist movements may get stronger if the economy is starting to collapse even more. I mean, I know the South African economy is collapsing, but if it gets worse, I believe the nationalist parties in there would get a better support. Secession ideas will definitely get a better support, and then great changes might happen in there.
And the other thing is, in the past, stuff was covered. If there were atrocities, they could be covered up. But now, with the alternative media is playing a major role, rivaling the mainstream media, it's much harder to cover things up now.
Yes, exactly. Now with the internet, it's impossible. It's literally impossible. You can't hide things anymore. By the way, this is one thing that I forgot to mention. Okay, two things. Just would like to mention that we got mainstream coverage from the UK regarding the petition. Okay, from the UK, from Brazil. There was a local newspaper here that actually they interviewed me. I gave them an interview. They had a couple of interesting questions. I think that was very productive to expose my point of view. Even China, there was a newspaper in China that made a video for this petition. And South Africa, of course, the United States. There was also a small alternative website in Sweden. That's it. I'm roughly sure. Perhaps there are other places as well, but as far as I know, this is all for what we get. In Brazil, I gave this interview. I can show you the link later. You can try to translate this with Google Translator. Then you at least get the whole idea for this interview. That was really interesting because I had the opportunity to present an idea that I never heard anyone presenting here in Brazil, which is the idea of ethnic nationalism. So that that was a great opportunity, and I believe that I explored that opportunity pretty well.
Okay. So, Rodrigo, it's been a great show. Thanks for being on.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your patience. And excuse me for my English. As I told you, this is not my primary language. Also, I got a little bit nervous because this is the first time I'm giving a radio interview. So, yeah, the whole thing makes things a little bit hard for me.
Well, thanks again. That's all we have for today's show. So take care. And we'll be back with you next time.
Thank you very much.